Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, and welcome to our first episode of 2026. Yes, thank God 2025 is over. We're on to 2026. I'm absolutely thrilled to have my good friend and colleague, Mike Volkoff, on the pod, where we're going to look back and maybe look forward. So, Michael, first of all, happy 2026.
Thank you, Tom. Always great to be with you. And let's hope, as we glide into the new year, that this is going to be an interesting year. I think it is. I think it's going to be an interesting year.
You had the best reason I've heard of that it's going to be a better year. And you want to tell us what that is?
Yeah, that you add the numbers up and we end up with 10. One is a beginning and 10 is even. So it's a beginning of something new and something calmer, a little calmer than 2025 with a lot of upsets. And let's just say, you know, new realities. But I think it's going to be an interesting year. I think there are some interesting trends as always. And I guess what came out to me, Tom, is the resilience of ethics and corporate ethics, and that you can't just, you know, wish them away or create a new reality, that we all include some kind of ethical values in our in ourselves, and it's reflected in the business community.
So let's pick up on that, Mike, because as she does in many ways, Wei Chen, I look to is, if not the, one of the top leaders and commentary of our community. And immediately after the Trump suspension of the FCPA, she wrote a blog post, which she opined that compliance is at a was at an inflection point in February of 2025, and she advocated that we needed to up our game in the field of ethics, not simply to be more ethical as corporate compliance officers and corporations, but also demonstrate to business leaders the business value of ethics. Is that something you saw as well, or is that part of the dialogue that we hope to drive into 2026, in your opinion?
I can tell you from being in the trenches with companies, working with, in terms of my practice, I think Wei Chen hit the nail right on the head. And for example, you know, there was a lot of question, okay, what does this mean with the FCPA pause? What does this mean with the new administration and sort of reexamining some assumptions we have? And with the turbulence and all the change with trade enforcement, tariffs, everything, what was the guiding light that kept us going? It was ethics, ethical values and behaviors. And that to me was sort of the comfort zone of where we should be operating. And I think you hit the nail right on the head as in your the end of your comment, that demonstrating the value of ethical behavior as a business proposition. We've been through this. You and I have spoken about this for 20 years, which is the fundamental position that ethical behaviors, ethical cultures, companies perform better. That doesn't mean you're going to be profitable, but it means you would do better than you would otherwise do. And you know, we've seen attempts to measure the ethical premium, the ethics premium, but I think it's our guiding light. And I do see some conversion, depending upon who I'm talking to, into the idea of translating that into your business goals, your performance, and inspiring people, because I think people are desperate for inspiration right now. And I think that they're looking for their workplace or their business to represent the values that they hold themselves. So what's interesting, Tom, just from my trench perspective, is I've seen more and more, I've been brought into cases where there are needs for internal investigations relating to violations of the code of conduct, the way people treat each other, the way conflicts of interest have become much more significant. I've had several major investigations involving not FCPA, but conflicts of interest. And look, we've seen it in the popular culture. I don't know if it's popular, but, and we had, you know, the Kiss Cam whatever situation.
Coldplay.
Yeah, Coldplay and the Kiss Cam. But that to me is not what I'm really talking about. But that was a reflection where everything came out on that. In other words, there was an expression by the public in response to it because of the implications of this. So then, okay, what do we then see next? Nestle, the CEO, you know, having an illicit relationship. And then, you know, that was again the reminder of ethics and the reminder of ethical values and the expectations that people have. So there's a groundswell behind it a little bit more as a way to cope with a sort of turbulent situation. And I think it's a good thing because it makes us valuable. So for example, one of my clients for the first time never had the word compliance with ethics. They didn't even have ethics. Now, what did they decide to do? We have to call it compliance and ethics, and now you're responsible for our ethical culture. I see that as a great development. But where were they 15 years ago setting up compliance without ethics? But I see it as a good thing. I think there's a greater demand, and maybe some of the business leaders are starting to get the picture. But I think Wei Chen is onto it.
Yeah, that speaks to me about a couple of different things. One is obviously culture, but the second is about trust. And do employees trust management to not simply be fair, but also have institutional justice? And Coldplay and Nestle, and if I could even talk about my alma mater, or one of my alma maters, the University of Michigan, which had two major corporate scandals or university scandals involving first the football team and then secondly that head coach of the football team, really spoke to, are you going to be treated fairly and will there be justice if somebody raises their hand and speaks up? And why do you think that's so important today?
Well, I think organizational justice has always been an important issue, but it's even more important now. You know, there are concerns about, you know, what's going on in our, let's say, justice system to begin with, but companies are expected to, and rightfully is, to adhere to those sort of due process principles, all the principles that we talked about being treated fairly. And trust is, what were the two most important words? Trust and integrity. That when you survey employees, what do they want to hear from their leaders about? Trust and integrity. And so I think organizational justice is imperative in this time because it's even more a death knell when you don't exercise and demonstrate your commitment to organizational justice. All you got to see is if a senior leader gets off or is treated differently than, let's say, a middle manager on a particular issue, you've lost the trust. You've lost the trust of the system. And it's interesting you say that because I'm also telling more and more people, I think, publish your internal investigation guidelines. Publish as much as you can about how you're making a promise to the employees of how you're going to handle an issue. And if we investigate, this is the way we do it. And then be held accountable by the people of your employees and whoever, even your third parties, which obviously comes into play sometimes. And be held accountable for that. So publish that. And remember, we had all those, you know, issues about, do we publish what we produced each year? How many violations did we have? Is the system fair? Are we doing this fairly? And I think that's even more important in this turbulent time. So the things that you've been talking about for years, Tom, beyond this, you know, document, you have been probably one of the most serious advocates for organizational justice. And I think, look, we can see I've seen it firsthand when situations are not handled properly. And we are, I think it'll continue. And if you're at senior leadership level, you can't cut corners. You can't treat people differently. You can't cut deals for your brother who is now all of a sudden a vendor. You know, for your company, the CEO at Kohler got in trouble. You know, that you can't do things like that. And so you can't get away with that stuff. And I think that's really important. And it is up to us to, you know, sort of a lot of this got, as we talked years and years ago with 2009, 2008, when the FCPA enforcement was ramping up, that everybody was into compliance. Now there's, without the FCPA being an aggressive enforcement risk that you have to deal with, although it's now in trade enforcement, but we still need to be adhering to our ethical principles. And I think that's perhaps to me one of the biggest issues, and perhaps will be the trend for 26, which is, what are companies doing in response to this demand? What are you showing for this? And it's not just saying, hey, we're committed to our code of conduct. How do you demonstrate it? How do you hold people accountable for it? But demonstration is really the most important thing by senior leadership, to demonstrate in concrete terms how they really adhere to ethical principles and their values. People want to hear what the values are of your company. And I hate to say the profound grasp of the obvious, which I'm very good at, is, you know, people want to believe in something, and you want to believe in your work. You spend 50, 60 hours a week working, and you want to believe in the mission of your organization. So I think that's really, you know, it's just so important, no matter what you're.
You have parroted that well-known Howard Sklarism, that water is wet. So shout out Howard Sklar. Yeah. But also, one of the things that I visited with Christy Grant Hart on another podcast, and one of the stories that for me was significant in 2025 was, I've always been fascinated with the multiple generations at work. And now, how do you communicate with a Gen Z, with a millennial, with a Gen X, with baby boomers, like the two guys on this podcast? And there are different styles of communication, but there are also different values. And that, I think, I hate to phrase younger people, but we'll just say perhaps millennials and Gen X's have a different sense of institutional justice and institutional fairness. And that may be more important to them than to people like us when we started our careers that just thought we're going to put our head down and put up with anything. So I hope corporations will respond to this, not just because it's people like Wei Chen and us are talking about it, but it's what their employees not only expect, but what they want as well.
Yeah. Now, when we get into Gen Z, Gen X, and millennials, I sort of am troubled by some of the recent surveys where there are real sort of ethical gaps after the millennials. Now, the millennials in the surveys that I like to cite were willing to take 10% pay cuts to work for an ethical company. In other words, they felt they had to and wanted to work at an ethical company. And I always say they took the 10% pay cut and then would call me and say, Dad, can you loan me some money or whatever, you know, make up the 10%. But I said, the thing about it is we're seeing some reflection of that in the surveys, Tom, in terms of a more cynical approach to corporate leadership. And whether or not people are adhering to ethical values, and does the system work in the favor of certain older parts of the company, the older leadership. And I've seen surveys to that effect. And I think, you know, Navex, others, LRN, they've all shown that there's some gap developing, I think, after the millennials. And how do you address that? That's a really interesting issue. Because the old communication style of inspiration and ethical commitment may not work as well. And so there's got to be some thought given as to that. And multiple generations, nobody cares about us baby boomers anymore. We're on the way out, but the millennials are really coming into the leadership roles. And they, I think, come in with sort of very high standards, if anything, a higher level than we experienced. That's for sure. In our
So, Mike, one of the things that has definitely increased is in the area of export controls, trade sanctions, import duties, and certainly tariffs. I know you and your firm are really actively involved in all of these arenas. So I just wanted to maybe start with sort of your big picture thoughts. Are we really looking at a new era of FCPA style enforcement in these arenas, or is something else going on?
I think we're definitely, this is definitely the highest risk area. And I wish I could take credit for this, but talking to Transparency International, what folks, they were emphasizing that where we have national security issues overlapping with compliance issues, that's where the aggressive enforcement is going to continue or grow. And think about it. So what have we seen? We see resources moving from not just the FCPA area, but other parts of the Justice Department all over to National Security Section Division, all into export and sanctions enforcement. We see absolutely the recreation of the FCPA model that happened this year in terms of bringing cases that were deferred prosecution agreements or, you know, the usual mix with DOJ leading the way and bringing the regulatory agencies with them. So first off, on the criminal side, I think this is going to be a continuing area of growth, and we're going to see more corporate settlements. The first example of that was the Cadence Design Systems case, $140 million settlement with all the bells and whistles like an FCPA case. Another case like that that didn't get as much attention was Unicat Systems. And I always love the facts of this. I just have to tell you the facts. Unicat Systems gets acquired by another company. The other company CEO goes over to visit the new facilities, the new company that they just bought. And what does he see? He sees them processing a transaction to Iran. And he says, whoa. And he was the one who uncovered the Iranian transaction. And then they ended up, the acquiring company ended up cooperating. And guess who went and forced Unicat to settle? And they all prosecuted the CEO, a former CEO of Unicat, who was trading with Iran and just doing it blatantly with all the usual, you know, emails and attempts to disguise. And that led to, you know, a fairly significant settlement of like $4 million. But nonetheless, this company got out of trouble because the CEO instituted this investigation, and look what happened. So that's in export controls area. And in sanctions, we also saw a huge administrative resolutions. OFAC, I think, was a little bit slower this year. They didn't have as many enforcement actions, and they seem to be focused on a lot of the Russian oligarchs in their cases. But I do think that will continue. So it's a big area. But the newest area, I think, where besides DOJ taking a lead role, is going to be in the False Claims Act and tariff circumvention or duties. Imports now become greater risks. I've had clients who had sort of their shipments stopped in Los Angeles. And why? Because they believe that some of the products were created through forced labor areas in China. And so those are always big risks. And I think that there's just more resources going into trade enforcement for obvious reasons with tariffs and circumventing of duties. And we have a fault. Once you see DOJ set up a task force, like the DOJ, False Claims Trade Enforcement Task Force, they're going to produce cases. And we're starting to see that already. So going into 26, I would emphasize to everybody, this is the area, if from a technical standpoint, aside from your culture, this should be close to the top of your list of things to do and things to double check. And I think we're going to see even more of that this year.